I'd like to welcome you, and especially you, to this episode of Infotainment. It is my 82nd episode, and I will be your round mound of podcast sound, pound for pound, the best podcast around. This is the last stop podcast shop on your internet dial, and my name is Randy. If you would like to unlock my 81st episode of Infotainment, which is called Dr. Strawberry and Mr. Whitehouse. It is available at patreon.com/infotainment. If you become a patron of Infotainment, funds from that will be useful in some medical expenses I'm having. Become a patron today. This goes out to all my loyal listeners. It's a good episode, and there's two other older episodes up there as well. And it's fun for all ears, and that's my information on that. Some podcasts will go there, and some will be free. I hope you become a patron today, and it is a donation of your choice through PayPal. And I would like to also thank all my faithful listeners from around the globe. Well, let's rev it up a notch with my first item up for bids on the podcast is always right. Since Halloween is rolling around, I do have a spooky story for you. It's for those of you who like Burger King. They have a new Halloween-type sandwich that apparently causes night terrors. And looking at the picture of it, it has a green bun. I don't know if I'd try this. I don't know if our Burger King is offering it. But if Burger King truly wanted you to have it your way, they would not be trying to feed you a sandwich that might make you have scary dreams. Yet, lo and behold, the chain is launching a special edition Halloween-inspired menu item called the Nightmare King, which has a vomit green bun, and it does look like that. And it is apparently clinically proven to terrify people as they sleep. It says, excuse me, with the aid of Paramount Trials, Florida Sleep and Neurodiagnostic Services, Inc. and Gold Forest, Inc., Burger King claims to have conducted a scientific study over the course of 10 nights with 100 participants. After eating the Nightmare King before bed, doctors and scientists monitored everyone's brain activities and found they were 3.5 times more likely to have vivid dreams. Someone transformed into a figure of a snake. One subject said when asked about her dream, according to her release. Another recalled aliens attacking a boat he was on. Okay, but what is this thing made out of? It gets a quarter pound of flame grilled beef and a crispy white meat chicken fillet topped with American cheese, bacon, mayonnaise, and onions. Between a disgusting-looking emerald green sesame bun. And that is a nightmare within itself. No word on what makes the bun green, which is sketchy, in my opinion. Is there a magical night terror-inducing potion in the sandwich? No. Dr. Jose Gabriel Medina, specialized somnologist, I butchered that, but in the study's lead doctor, claims that unique combination of proteins and cheese in the Nightmare King led to an interruption of the subject's REM, rapid eye movement, cycles, during which we experienced the majority of our dreams. All we heard there was, don't eat flame-broiled beef and chicken fillet with American cheese before bed, and that is duly noted. But if you're a Burger King fan, you might look out for this sandwich if you want to have some interesting dreams. The Nightmare King has recommended a retail price of $6.39 and will be available for a limited time only starting October 22nd. So we got a few more days here. Since it's the 18th, I'll have to check out this burger. If you're tickled by discolored foods and love getting a terrible night's sleep, this could be the sandwich for you. If you do not fit that description, perhaps you'd rather have a peaceful slumber after enjoying the best burger in your state. Well, I don't know. With the medications I take, I have enough weird dreams as it is. I don't know if I want to try that, but it must be something in that with the bun being vomit green that causes that or something. But check it out if you're a Burger King fan. Next up, we have a story from CJ from his home studio through the magic of an email attachment. But I'll bring this up right now with my commentary afterwards.
Well, hey, Randy, we're coming to you from my studio this time, and I've got a weird animal story for you. Coming to you from the state of Florida, not from overseas someplace, but over in Florida. Gator traps girls in tree. A Florida girl climbed up a tree to escape an alligator as her mother frantically called 911 for help. The incident occurred on a Friday at a camping area north of Orlando when 15-year-old Jordan Broderick was floating on a raft in the Ocala National Forest and spotted an alligator coming towards her. Broderick grabbed a branch hanging over the water and used it to climb up a tree, but the alligator waited patiently at the foot of the tree. Broderick's parents witnessed the alligator stalking their daughter and called 911 for help. "My daughter's stuck in a frickin' tree, and there's gators surrounding her," the mom told the 911 operator. "We can't get her out." It took about 30 minutes for police to arrive, and when they did, the Ocala County Deputy Mitch Blackman arrived with an AR-15 rifle and fired one shot into the alligator, killing it. Well, I guess that's one way of getting girls out of trees. I've heard of cats being stuck in trees, but not girls. But that happened there in the state of Florida.
Well, CJ, just another reason not to move to the state of Florida. Between alligators, humidity, and hurricanes, I don't think I'll be moving there anytime soon. The only way I want to see my alligator is on a plate smothered in barbecue sauce. I've heard of golfers having alligators cross their path on the golf course, which would be kind of unnerving. But I've only had alligator once, and it tasted fairly good. So, yeah, that's the only way I want it, is with maybe some barbecue sauce and salt and pepper or something. But that kind of reminds me of... I'm going to do a story about snakes. I did see a video that came across my Facebook where people have been scared by a remote-controlled snake crossing their path. And people just run like crazy and jump. And I wonder where you can buy those. That would be funny on Halloween if... you had a bunch of kids and you didn't want to give them candy is to have like four or five snakes wiggling down the sidewalk at the kids. But parents might not be too pleased about that. They do have something else scary too as Halloween I've seen in a couple of years. Where they have like a screen in front of their picture window in their living room, and they have shadows doing unspeakable things like killing and stuff like that. I don't know, some of the stuff is pretty realistic, you know, where people might actually call the cops on some of that stuff. With that segue and my snake... observations. I'd love to get some of those remote controlled snakes. I think that'd be cool to run them all up and down the halls of my apartment building. It might not go over too well, but we'll move on to my snake story. My next item for your podcast perusal, a 62-year-old man has some stories for the grandkids. This story is he was trapped in a snake-filled mine for 2 days and survived. And you thought you were having a shitty week. While the rest of us are crying about the end of Nathan for you and pining over the loss of our nose statues. That was another story where a huge sculpture of a nose, 50 pounds, was stolen from somebody's front porch. I don't know. And they thought they were going to decorate it for Halloween. I don't know what gross things they were going to put on the nostrils, but that would have been interesting. But it turns out some people out there are heroically dealing with actual problems. Earlier this week, a 62-year-old man in Arizona accidentally fell down a 100-foot mine shaft and got stuck there for 2 days. Fox 10 Phoenix, getting her done for the Phoenix area, reports. Oh, there were snakes. Poisonous snakes. And you thought, that's the way that goes. And repeated a line. I love the people that write these things. John Waddell went up to visit the abandoned mine near Aguila, Arizona. I'm probably pronouncing that Aguila wrong. But to look for gold at 62... I don't wish to be out there hunting for gold, I don't believe. He did this on a Monday. While he was there, he accidentally toppled down the shaft. Luckily, surviving the long fall, which is good, but he broke both of his legs in the process. And that wasn't even the worst of it. While Waddell was down there in the dark, presumably cold and terrified, in excruciating pain from the massive bone fractures. I can't even imagine breaking both legs, what the pain would be from that. He reportedly realized he wasn't alone in the shaft. He was surrounded by rattlesnakes. Over the course of the next 2 days, Waddell managed to survive fighting and killing 3 rattlesnakes with his bare hands before they were able to bite him. He had no cell phone service, so he just screamed as loud as he could for help, though he likely knew that the shaft was deep and the mine was isolated and the chances of someone happening to hear him were low. Luckily, Waddell had mentioned to his neighbor that he was heading to the mine on Monday. When he never appeared at home, the neighbor leaped into action. He called me Monday and told me he was coming to the mine. Waddell's friend and neighbor, Terry Schrader, told the Fox 10 News. We always had a deal. If he was not back by Tuesday, come look for him. Because he said he would be back Tuesday. Schrader drove out to the mine to look for Waddell and finally heard the faint cries coming from the mine shaft. As I pulled out of my truck, I could hear him hollering, "Help, help," Schrader went on. I did get enough cell phone service that the deputies were on their way. Schrader called 911 and soon rescuers were on the scene working to get his buddy out of the mine shaft. After 6 hours, the emergency responders were finally able to lug Waddell back up into the glorious light of day again. He was immediately airlifted to a nearby hospital, where he was treated for the broken limbs and dehydration. It's unclear how many years of psychotherapy it will take before he doesn't wake up with dreams about snakes lunging at him from out of the darkness, like some kind of Indiana Jones sequence, though. Oh, man, that would be right out of Indiana Jones. I kind of think he might give up his gold hunting expeditions after suffering 2 broken legs. An amazing story for the grandkids, though.
You look like a man-o-lantern.
And now, with Halloween approaching quickly, and the movie Halloween coming out in theaters starring Jamie Lee Curtis, we have this story that you may not know, that the Michael Myers mask in the movie Halloween was actually the face of William Shatner. I did not know this. Because the film had an incredibly low budget, the prop department on horror classic Halloween had to dress serial killer Michael Myers in the cheapest mask they could find in their local fancy dress shop. Turns out that was a mask of William Shatner, which cost them the princely sum of $2. Well, they must have had a low budget for the original. They modified it a bit, spray-painted it white, and made it a bit scarier, and it became one of the iconic images of horror cinema. The cheapo slasher went on to take $70 million at the worldwide box office, more than 250 times its $325,000 budget. That makes it the most profitable film ever to feature William Shatner's face, beating Star Trek II and Miss Congeniality. Shatner also claims to have gone trick-or-treating in the mask of his own face. That would be something to have William Shatner come to your door in the mask. Let's see, what other Halloween? Let's see, oh yeah, this story. The British tradition of carving a scary face into a vegetable was originally done with turnips. When Irish immigrants took the idea of the jack-o'-lantern to America, they started using pumpkins because they were cheaper than turnips, not to mention making nicer soup and lattes. But we think you'll agree, turnips are way, way scarier. Yeah, and they got a picture of one, too, and it looks like kind of a cross between a skeleton head and a mummy. And it does look worse than a pumpkin. I had a pumpkin, this group I go to, we got pumpkins and we painted them instead of carving. And unfortunately, I set it on the kitchen table. And one day I was wondering what that smell was. I didn't leave it there all that long. It was there a week. But it started draining and it got soft all over my table, which pissed me off to no end because it got a lot of things wet. But that's one of the scary things about the movie Halloween that you might have not known. Let's see, there's something about, if you're in Germany, hide the knives. They celebrate Halloween in Germany, but as time to honor and respect the dead. One tradition is to hide all the knives in the house for fear that returning spirits might injure themselves on any knives that are left out. There are a number of logical problems with this tradition, not least of which is that ghosts tend to be dead already, so how much damage can a knife realistically do? But if you start applying logic to the idea of the dead walking the earth. And if you are in Italy, you can enjoy the beans of the dead. In Italy, they have a traditional Halloween recipe, which is kind of an oval cookie, a bit like a macaron. And it's called, try to pronounce that, which roughly translates as beans of the dead. Brett Favre Del Morte. Not Del Monte, but Del Morte. Beans of the Dead sounds like the great loss George A. Romero zombie movie nobody's been waiting for. Chances are, if your trick-or-treat sweets have been poisoned, a family member did it. Oh, there are all kinds of urban myths about the man, mean old crone, or crazed madman in the tumble-down shack, slipping poison or dangerous items into cakes and candy for the unsuspecting cherubs who knock on the door on Halloween. But in reality, almost every case of Halloween candy tampering has been performed by a family member. For example, there was a case of Ronald O'Brien, who laced his son's sweets with cyanide in Texas in 1974. Or the case in Detroit in 1970, where 5-year-old Kevin Tustin died of a heroin overdose after he found his uncle's stash of the drug. Later, sprinkled heroin over his Halloween candy to try and protect his uncle. Ugh. And of the cases of foreign objects hidden in sweets, like needles or razor blades, all but a handful have been hoaxes. Well, that's a good thing. Or the media jumping on a story which turned out to be untrue. There was, however, the case in Manchester of a 23-year-old man who was giving out baggies of cocaine to kids instead of sweets. Though he didn't hide in any sweets, and police said he'd given the items in error. Oh my God. Not funny, I guess. But I thought it was. Dancing for treats. According to most experts, inspiration for trick-or-treating came from the European mumming, which involved people in costume playing songs and dancing in return for treats. It was also thought that beggars began the tradition of trick-or-treat. While they played no pranks, men often went door-to-door begging for money. Well, now they stand on street corners with cardboard signs. It was mainly the poor that took part. However, wealthy children also joined in. Wearing animal skins. I don't know, on Google and stuff, you see these pictures with the guys wearing horse heads. And I got a picture of that. Throughout history, tribes have worn costumes to connect with the spirits of the dead. This often consisted of animal heads and skins. The tradition lasted the test of time and was used in modern-day celebration of Samhain, which inspired Halloween in the U.S. I did not know that. Cabbage Night. Ugh. Why not just say Cabbage and Haggis Night? And coming from a Scottish fortune-telling game, girls often used cabbage stumps in order to predict their future husbands on the night of Halloween. In Framingham, Massachusetts, teens often skipped the fortune-telling and preferred simply throwing cabbage at their neighbors' houses. Probably eggs over here, across the pond in the U.S. That's it for some of those Halloween stories.
Well, folks, here's hoping you have a great All Hallows Eve.
Now I'm going to talk about something completely different. Since this town has no movie theater, last movie I remember seeing, I can't remember what it was, but it was an action film. I like action films like Mission Impossible, stuff like that, and different ones. But movies today, action films, I don't know what it is, but they have to have the music so darn loud that you can't hear the actor's dialogue. I don't know where this comes from. Can't they tell this in the editing process? Hey, I can't understand this guy because the music's so damn loud. I was trying to watch the last Batman movie on regular television tonight, the one with Bane. And with the music and Bane's voice, I could understand maybe like 4 words out of 10 that dude was trying to say. I wish they would tune down the music and make the dialogue understandable. That thing over his face, I don't know what they did, why they decided on that kind of voice, but who knows, they were very successful movies. And that goes for commercials as well. They say they don't raise the level of audio on commercials, but they do compared to the programming. I swear they do, and it becomes annoying. I don't know if you've seen this car commercial. I forget whether it's for Hyundai or it's the Crisscross or the Cross car. Yeah, I'm going to buy a car just because this white dude can rap really well. Well, I don't know if it's really well, but if you notice in that commercial, they showed a bunch of people listening to his rap, and this black guy was listening to this guy rap about the car he was test driving, and he looks at him like, dude, you're white. What are you doing trying to rap? It was so funny, the expression he had in his face. And I'm going to buy a car based on a guy who can sound like a movie theater voice when they're doing the test drive. Now, if you've noticed the Carvana ads, they say that you can buy a car out of a vending machine. Just drop a coin in and your car's going to come down and come out like a vending machine. Funny stuff. And then Jimmy John's Subway outlet, they have a commercial where they have Jimmy John's restaurant in like a grain storage bin out in a wheat field. It's amazing. I want to know where this place is so I can go there and just... Can I order Jimmy John's if I walk through this wheat field and find this grain bin? And they show people walking out to it. It's pretty hilarious what these commercial advertisers come up with. Okay, what is up next on this Halloween-inspired podcast? I'm going to talk about the Travel Channel show Ghost Adventures. And we're going to talk about the Diebuck Box. And the show's host, well, he's kind of the leader of the Ghost Adventures crew, was tweeting about, should I open the Diebuck Box on Halloween when they're doing a live show? And I didn't know what the Diebuck Box was. And what it says, looking it up on Google, the Diebuck Box, or Diebuck Box, is a wine cabinet which is said to be haunted by a Diebuck. A Diebuck is a restless, usually malicious spirit believed to be able to haunt and even possess the living. The box gained notoriety when it was auctioned on eBay with an accompanying horror story written by Kevin Manis and is the original inspiration for the 2012 film The Possession. If a Diebuck box is burnt, the box will take a long time to burn. I guess there's more than one of these things. And they go on to say, the haunted Diebuck box, is the story real? Let's see what they say about that. The infamous Diebuck box is said to be haunted. It was put on eBay and auctioned and has changed hands several times. People in possession of the box reported things like a strong odor, unexplained sickness, insomnia, nightmares, and more. And they said there's a whole website dedicated to this box, but I haven't looked at that yet. This website was created by the last owner of the box. Well, what are you going to do with the box if you don't open it? There is no denying of the fact that every once in a while a story pops up that manages to increase the list of haunted stories we keep confronting every now and then. These stories just manage to freak us out and get us thinking about their authenticity. The story of the Diebuck box is no different. In fact, the story of the box received so much hype that it eventually managed to get on the big screen. Yeah, they already mentioned that. The movie The Possession, even on the website dedicated to that. The Diebuck box is often spelled as Diebuck box, refers to a supposedly haunted wine cabinet. So who haunts the box? The story originates from Jewish folklore, and Dybbuk is none but a tormented evil spirit with malicious intents and the ability to even possess human beings. Sounds creepy. So what's the story behind it? It is said that a survivor of the Holocaust, we prefer calling it, oh geez, I'm not going to read that part because they kind of question the Holocaust there. See, it was summoned, the Dybbuk, accidentally using a Ouija board that she made by herself at home. Upon realizing the mistake, she trapped the tormented evil in an old wine cabinet. It is said that survivor was Polish and her name was Havala. Not many people knew about the box existence until Kevin Manis put it on eBay and auctioned it off in 2003. In the description put forward by Manis for the eBay auction, he said that he bought the box on a real estate sale. He mentioned the box belonged to Havala, who managed to survive the Holocaust and escape to Spain, where she purchased the wine cabinet before immigrating to the USA. It was Havala's granddaughter who mentioned that the cabinet belonged to her grandmother. When Manis learned that the box was an heirloom, he tried to give it back to Havala's granddaughter, who refused to accept the box, stating the box was kept concealed in the sewing room of her grandmother's, and no one has opened it because the evil spirit that lived inside the box. In the description on eBay auction, Manis further wrote that he opened the box and found the following items tucked inside the box. One U.S. wheat penny from 1925, one wheat penny from 1928, a black-brown lock of hair that was tied up using a string, one dried rosebud, one candlestick made of black cast iron, and the holder had octopus legs, not real. One golden wine cup, one small statue made of granite, and the Hebrew word Shalom engraved on it. Manis also wrote that after acquiring the box, he met with a series of nightmares. He also mentioned that the others who possessed the box or even stayed at Manis' house while he had the box also suffered nightmares. According to Manis' account, he presented the box to his mother, and she suffered from a stroke the very same day. He gave the box to his mother as a birthday present. Manis wrote in the description, oh, wow, what a birthday present. He suffers a stroke the same day. Possession of the box reported smelling jasmine flowers or cat urine and reported nightmares where they saw an old hag accompanying the box. People reported bad experiences, including the sister who returned the box to him, stating the doors of the cabinet wouldn't stay shut. Even his brother returned the box, stating that it smelled like cat urine. He eventually sold the box from the shop where he intended to keep the box. A few days later, he found the box at his shop's doorstep with a note reading, "This has a bad darkness." Manis concluded the description on eBay auction with the following words, "I would destroy this thing in a second, except I really don't have any understanding of what I may or may not be dealing with. I am afraid, and I do mean afraid, that if I destroy the cabinet, whatever it is that seems to have come with the cabinet may just stay here with me. I have been told that there are people who shop on eBay that understand these kind of things, and specifically look for these kinds of items. If you are one of these people, please buy this cabinet and do whatever you do with the thing like this. Help me." Yeah, I could see Zach Bagans trying to get a hold of this for his haunted museum out there in Las Vegas. Manis managed to sell the box for $140 to a student of Truman State University, Kirksville, Missouri, by the man named of Losef Nitsky. over 6 months after the purchase, Losef put the box for auction once again on eBay. In the listing description, he wrote about weird health issues and insomnia among his roommates. He also mentioned that occasional strong odors made appearance and his car kept breaking and requiring service every now and then. Oh, that would really piss me off. I've had enough car service problems in my life. He also mentioned, incidentally, one day I went out and I had a Grand Am at the time. I went out and tried to start the car and it just wouldn't do anything. And here the repair guy calls me up and, what did you do to this car? It needs a battery, alternator, starter, new wiring harness. And he goes, what did you do to it? I go, I tried to start it. I didn't say anything. And I don't know, I should have had a second opinion done on that, but I might have been taken for a ride on that one. Let's see. He also mentioned that his hair fell out with no explanation and there was no evidence of an illness after he had himself medically tested. He also mentioned the box caused the lights in his house to burn out. So Losef ended up selling the box on eBay, and this time it sold for $280. The person who purchased the box was Jason Hudson, who was director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine, Kirksville, Missouri. Haxton later reported weird health problems after he acquired the box. He reported hives, coughing blood, and head-to-toe welts. Oh, boy. Why don't you try to sell this on eBay just to make your health decline? It's totally worth buying. All these claims were made by Haxton in his book titled The Dybbuk Box. He also created the website dybbukbox.com, which I might look at while we're here. For this Halloween-inspired podcast, Huxton reportedly consulted with Jewish religious leaders, rabbis, and figured out a way to seal back the Dybbuk inside the box and then took it to a secret place and hid it away forever. He never disclosed the location of the box to anyone. So what do you think? Is the story of the Dybbuk box
haunting true?
Or was the story just made up with some inherent commercial gain? Think again, because from Menes to Losef to Haxton, everyone made money. The first two made money by selling the box, and the last person made money by selling his book. We will like to know about your thoughts on... I'd like to know about your thoughts on this. You can email me at randyms12@gmail.com. If they're good, I might read them on the air. And be sure to watch if you're a fan of the Ghost Adventures on Halloween night when they're supposedly supposed to open this box. Well, maybe, I don't know if it's exactly this one, or I don't know if Zach Bagans became owner of it or not. Well, I see a picture of the thing, and it looks like it'd be a nice addition to anybody who likes antiques or whatever. Well, that's a very long story about that. Too long for this podcast. But check that out. It's a good... it'll be interesting to see what the Ghost Adventures crew reacts when they open this box that they have. And if they have to have somebody come and bless the thing or do something, or if he just closes it and puts it in his haunted museum, which I hear is voted the number one museum in Las Vegas, I guess. So, with that, I think we will end this program, my 82nd episode of Infotainment. If you would like to check out my last podcast, 81st, called Dr. Strawberry and Mr. Winehouse. I was thinking of the wine box. Mr. Whitehouse, that's located at patreon.com/infotainment. And for a donation of your choice, you can unlock that episode. Plus, there are a couple other programs up there for you to peruse. If you so desire, there are older shows that I've done that maybe you have not heard. So I would appreciate it if you would do that for those faithful fans of infotainment. See, you can tweet my Twitters at Randy Podcaster. You can check out my Facebook page using infotainment in the search. And let's see what else. Oh, I also am now located on Google Play Music if you use that app on your phone. I'm on a Player FM also. If you use that app, TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. I'm on Podbean, Podomatic, Blueberry, also, and infotainmentpodcast.com. And I would like to say thanks for all of you who've decided to listen to this program from around the globe. And we hope you have a
festive Halloween.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye, folks.